All right, there we go. Recording on the air. Good morning, Wednesday morning Bible study, The Art of Dying. I'm pretty sure this is week 7, although I've been losing track. So is that a sign of age? Am I getting closer to dying?
Yes.
Well, the answer is yes. Of course. We all are, right? So last week, if you have your little handouts, your photocopy of The Art of Dying, if you don't, there's more copies up here. So last week we talked about temptation number 3 that the devil confronts us with, and that is the temptation to impatience. Now, especially when we're approaching death, I visit people, and they often say, actually this is fairly often, "Pastor, I'm ready. Why isn't God taking me to heaven now?" And I say, "I don't know. You can pray that God take you to heaven now, but just remember it's in His time, when He's ready." And then I usually, tongue-in-cheek, make a joke saying about, maybe he's not finished painting your room yet. So that's why he hasn't taken you. He's still fixing it up for you. I mean, you need new curtains. Of course, impatience does not just confront us when we're approaching death, but throughout our lives as well. So, I'm going to be on page 68 and 69, if you want to go there. The fourth temptation, particularly as you're approaching death, but even throughout life. So, as you guys know, these are short chapters. They're like 4 or 5 pages. So I'm going to read a good chunk of it. In the fourth temptation, the devil appeals to the sixth person's vanity and complacency, a form of spiritual pride. By this, the devil threatens especially the devout, religious, or faultless. For when he cannot lead a man astray from his faith, or to despair, or impatience, the devil then approaches him through his own self-satisfaction, casting thoughts such as these into his mind. Oh, how firm you are in faith, how strong in hope, and how steadfastly patient in your infirmity. Oh, how many good things you have worked for. You should take tremendous pride in these things, since you are not like the others who have committed endless sins, and nevertheless, with a single groan of remorse, attained to heavenly kingdoms. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven cannot be denied you, because you have fought rightly. Receive, therefore, the crown prepared for you, and you will take a higher seat than the rest. Through these and similar words, the devil strives most urgently to lead the dying person towards spiritual pride or vainglory. The title of this temptation is vainglory. If you think of vainglory, what is that? It's a little confusing. Vanity is what? About yourself, thinking about yourself, you're vain. And glory, so you're giving yourself glory. Another name for this, which he mentions in here, is pride. Is pride a problem? Yes. Sinful pride is a problem. Now, what's the opposite of pride?
Humility.
Humility, right. Now, I want to explain this a little bit. Well, first of all, let me say pride. So this temptation, which is especially effective against God's faithful people, you and me. So here's how the thinking goes. I want to explain this a little bit, kind of what he's saying. You guys already know this. Or are you going to heaven? You're approaching death. Are you going to heaven? Well, yes, I'm going to heaven. Because I'm a Lutheran. And we believe rightly.
No.
We're not like all those other denominations. They have some flaw in their teachings. But we believe rightly. Correct? Well, we do. I'm a Lutheran for that reason. So we get filled with our own arrogance. And then we say, well, look at me. I've been a churchgoer my whole life. And I've tithed. And I even go to Bible study all the time. You're all here.
Yeah.
So the devil gets in our own pride and says, well, you deserve to be saved. Look at all that you've done. You've led a good Christian life, and you believe rightly like the Lutherans do. So you deserve to be in heaven. Well, right there is where that thinking went off the line. Is it good to go to church?
Yes.
Is it good to tithe?
Yes.
Is it good to go to Bible study?
Yes.
Is it because of those things that therefore you deserve to be in heaven?
No,
that's the problem. Right there, that's where the devil takes you off the rails. Do any of us deserve to be in heaven?
No.
So that's where we fall into a problem here. We say, well, look at me, I'm basically good. I've been a good Christian all my life. I've done all these good things, so I deserve this. And that's where the devil tries to tempt us, and he tries to open a little chink in the armor and try to get us to weaken in faith or even draw us away from faith. Okay? All right, let me keep reading. In light of this, keep in mind that this sort of pride is to be especially avoided. First, because pride alone turned the angel Lucifer into the devil. And likewise, pride makes man like the devil. Let me turn the page. Second, because through pride, man seems to commit blasphemy, since he presumes that whatever good he has received from God comes from himself. Third, because his self-satisfaction might become so great that he would be damned for it. So yes, pride is all of that. And, you know, this, it kind of makes me think, is pride is, you know, at kind of the root of sin? Why, what happened with Lucifer? We know from Revelation, he was an archangel. And what did he want? He was filled with pride. He wanted to be like God himself. So God kicked him out of heaven. That's where the devil came from. And what did Lucifer do when he was kicked out of heaven? Took a third of the angels with him, it says in Revelation. So yes, it kind of starts with pride. Pride is among the foundation of sin, of all sins. Okay? What is the first commandment? You shall have no other gods. Who's the most common before me? What is the most common god we have?
Ourselves.
Pride. I want to do it. You know, you think of a two-year-old. No, I'll do it. I don't need your help. You know, two-year-olds. We're all a bunch of two-year-olds, aren't we? Yes. All right. Now, he says here, this unknown author from the Middle Ages, we need to beware of pride, first because pride turned Lucifer into the devil. It did. Second, because through pride, man seems to commit blasphemy and presumes whatever good he has received from God comes from himself. And look at the footnote down there. That's a good Bible verse. 1 Corinthians 4:7. Maybe highlight that. I should have had it ready up on the screen, but I'm going to look it up and just read it to you. This is an excellent verse that points to this very point. Okay? So 1 Corinthians 4:7. How nimble are my fingers? There, I found it. This is what it says. For who sees anything different in you? What do you have that you did not receive? If then you received it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? This is St. Paul scolding the Corinthians for thinking that they earned and deserved their stuff themselves. All my stuff, I earned it. I deserve it. And what is Paul saying? No, God gave you everything. Everything you have is a gift. A gift from God. So we should not fall into this prideful thought that my stuff is my own and I deserve it because I earned it. Okay? Some of you have heard Pastor Q's saying, I have heard it a few times, yeah, I think I'm falling into that trap where I repeat myself sometimes. I think I repeat myself sometimes.
That's okay, because we don't remember everything.
Yeah, but hopefully you remember more than 5 seconds.
Well, yeah.
Pastor Q has said, you can't imagine how many ways God can take your stuff from you. Right? You've heard him say that, some of you? I see a lot of heads nodding. And it's a good thought. It's like, we think our stuff is mine. God can cause accidents, disasters, medical conditions, and say, I'm going to show you that your stuff is not yours. And he'll take it all away. Remember Job? And then Job remained faithful. God gave it all back. Yeah, it's all from God. So we shouldn't be filled with pride thinking that it's all because we deserve it. And then the third point there that he makes, third, because his self-satisfaction might become so great that he would be damned for it. Your pride can swell so much that it flows into unbelief, disbelieving God. There's the danger. Okay? Now, how do we fight against this? Well, the next little part of this chapter, good inspiration of the angel concerning vainglory. Oh, by the way, if you turn back a page, you look at the woodcut on page 68, Middle Ages, they didn't have illustrations, they had woodcuts. There's the dying man, and what is around him? All these demons giving him crowns.
Oh, yeah.
The demons are all giving him crowns. Oh, you deserve the crown of life. Look at that. Look at all those crowns they're giving him. No, the answer is we don't deserve the crown of life. We are given as a free gift out of God's mercy the crown of life. Okay, turn back to page 73. Against the fourth temptation of the devil, the angel gives good inspiration, saying, "Wretched one, why are you prideful, crediting your constancy in faith, hope, and patience to yourself, when it should be ascribed to God alone? Nothing good comes from yourself, as the Lord says, 'Without me you can do nothing.' And elsewhere it is written, 'Do not be arrogant, or boast, or praise yourself excessively, or presume anything about yourself, or attribute anything good to yourself.' And the Lord says, 'He who exalts himself will be humbled.' And again, 'Unless you become like a child, you will not enter into the kingdom of heaven.' Thus, humble yourself before God, and you will be lifted up. The Lord says, 'He who humbles himself will be exalted.'" All of those quotes are excellent quotes right there. They're all from Jesus. Notice, those are all quotes from the Gospels. Jesus said all that. So the opposite, I already briefly asked this, the opposite of pride or vainglory is humility. Well, let me explain that for a little, for a moment, because I used to have a misunderstanding about it. Confirmation days and beyond, I'm like, okay, we shouldn't be prideful, we should instead be humble. So I mistakenly thought, until I learned and realized otherwise, well, humility is, well, I'm a poor, dirty, lousy, rotten sinner. I'm such a bad person. That's not godly humility. Does God want you to have an evil attitude of yourself? No. Godly humility is not thinking down upon yourself. It's thinking of others first and yourself second. You still think and recognize that you are loved by God. That's part of humility. But you recognize that you need to help other people before you help yourself. Oh, I have all this stuff. I don't need all this stuff. I don't need to hoard all this stuff. So I'm going to share it with those people who need. That's godly humility. Not to think less of yourself, but rather to think of other people first. Okay, does that make sense?
Sure.
That's truly the opposite of pride. Okay? So that's what Jesus is talking about here. And when you think of others first, and you think of the needs and the love you should have for others, then what does Jesus say in that last quote right where I stopped? He who humbles himself will be exalted. And Augustine says, if you humble yourself, God comes down to you. If you exalt yourself, God withdraws from you. Hence, turn your mind from pride, which made Lucifer, at one point, the most beautiful of angels, the most deformed of devils. Pride cast him from the heights of heaven to the depths of hell, and was the reason for all sin. So yes, first of all, humble yourself. If you humble yourself, yeah, Jesus comes to you and picks you up and lifts you up and boosts you up and encourages you. But if you exalt yourself, oh, look at me. I'm so good. Look at all the good things I've done. God, you have to save me. I'm a good person. Well, what's God going to do? He's going to back off. He's going to remove himself from that. That's what Augustine was talking about. It's a good insight. And then this last part here, right where I stopped, the reason for all sin. Does the reason for all sin start with pride? You know, I have to admit, kind of reading through this and preparing, I hadn't really pondered that. But when you think about it, ponder it a little bit, kind of your own devotional thinking, pride is at the root of all sin, isn't it? It really is. That's an interesting thought. All right, turn the page. Kind of wrap it up a little bit here. So I'm on page 74 in your photocopies. So two things must especially be noted whenever the dying person perceives that he is tempted by pride. First, he should consider how pride so displeased God that on a single occasion of it, he banished from heaven the noblest of creatures, Lucifer. Yeah, pride was that upsetting to God. And then you skip down to the end. Second, he should consider how humility pleased God to such an extent that in its preeminent manifestation, the glorious Virgin Mary conceived God and was exalted above the choirs of angels. Now, yes, this is written by a Catholic monk. They have this fascination with Mary. Now, we don't hold Mary as being better than anyone else, but we do recognize she was a very faithful young woman. And so one opposition to pride, if you feel yourself tempted by pride, one response would be, as this monk writes in his Middle Age book, first think about Lucifer, that on account of pride, Lucifer was cast out of heaven. Second, think about Mary, that she was the humblest of young women. And was she scared? I mean, we do uphold her as being, a wonderful example of faithfulness and godliness, even though we don't adore her like the Catholic Church does, which is, they go a little overboard. But nevertheless, you know, she's a 14, 15-year-old young lady, scared out of her wits. An angel just tells her she's pregnant. She's not been married yet. And what does she say? Let it be to me according to what you've said. Oh, my goodness. Talk about humility. That is incredible. That truly is a great example to us of godly humility. So if you're tempted by pride, remember these. And then I want to give you another Lutheran answer. I like to Lutheranize things, right? Because we're right in everything, aren't we? Sorry. Look at me, how humble I am. That's a self-contradicting statement, isn't it?
Yeah. You realize it.
Yeah, I realize it, right?
You realize that you're humble.
I tell my wife all the time, I'm the humblest person you know. She rolls her eyes. She rolls her eyes, yes. All right, so here's a Lutheran response. You're feeling tempted by pride, and I've actually, this comes to me because I remember preaching a whole sermon at Thanksgiving on this half a dozen years ago. Give thanks. Give thanks for everything. Think of the catechism, and in the Apostles' Creed and the Lord's Prayer. What does God give to us? Clothing and shoes, house and home, food and drink, land, animals, and all that I have. And I took my own advice one time, and in my prayers, I'm like trying to say thanks for everything you can think of, even the little details. Thank you, God, for these wonderful shoes that keep my feet warm and dry. Thank you, God, for the lunch I have today. It's so delicious. Thank you, God, for my family. Thank you, God, for my country. Thank you, God, for my house. Thank you, God, for the wonderful fly. You go on and on. Like 20 minutes later, I'm starting to fall asleep. There's so much stuff to say thank you for. If you, when you're tempted with pride, give thanks for everything you have you can think of, that will point out to you that, guess what? It's not yours. It's all a gift from God. And He has blessed you tremendously. And so that will help to reduce the pride that you are feeling tempted by. Okay? So there's a kind of a Lutheran appendix to this little chapter here. Give thanks, and that helps to combat the temptation of pride. All right, just shy of a half an hour. Any questions?
Well,
Anne.
And if you're giving thanks, that's going to help you be humble.
Yes.
Rather than...
Correct.
Of course.
If you're giving thanks, that will help you to be humble. All right. Any other questions? All right, so I'll get this situated for you. So Laura Freeling is our Register of Deeds, and most of you know her. Some of you may not, because you know how churches are with early and late service. And she and her husband are early service people. So if any of you are late service people, you might be like, I think I recognize her. But she's here all the time in church, so you know her, and you're on your... Second term?
Will be second term. Yeah.
She's up for election this fall.
Oh.
So vote for her. Yay. Although she told me that yesterday that no one else filed for the position to run. So she's running unopposed in the fall. So she needs at least one vote.
Yeah.
To get elected. Needs at least one vote. There's nobody else running against her.
Vote for yourself.
Yeah, vote for yourself, yes. So please welcome Laura. She's going to talk to us about a whole bunch of things regarding deeds and transfer of property and ladybird deeds. And everybody has a handout? All right, all yours, Laura.
Did you get one, Bob? I never knew where you were sitting, so let me run this back real quick. Thank you for having me, Pastor. I appreciate it. I do feel that part of my responsibility as an elected official is also to help educate where I can, let people know of services that are provided in our office, etc. So I do appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk to you. The office, of course, is located at in St. Joe at the old Washington Elementary School, if anyone's familiar with that. You're welcome to come by anytime. Office hours are 8:30 to 5. I'm happy to see anyone, or call me, email. We can set up an appointment if you want. If you ever have questions or anything that you're wondering about, just call and we'll talk it through. Today's goals, I want to talk a little bit about the office. I want to talk about the importance of land records and document content. And then I like to alert people of questionable practices that I see happening in our office, just so that you can be aware and be ready if you receive something. And then obviously questions either along the way or at the end, whatever works best. I think it's best to give kind of an overview, the totality of the office as a whole, and that might help you understand that little portion of it that you're going to do. I know you've already talked with some estate planners and things of that nature, but part of that comes to our office, and we'll talk about that, and maybe you'll have a better understanding of it all. Or if you haven't gone that far yet, then maybe this will give you some ideas of what you want to do and what direction you want to go in. First of all, I'd like to read for you an excerpt from Jeremiah. Jeremiah said, "The word of the Lord came to me, Hanamel, son of Shallum, your uncle is going to come to you and say, buy my field at Anathoth, because as nearest relative, it is your right and duty to buy it. Then just as the Lord had said, my cousin Hanamel came to me in the courtyard of the guard and said, buy my field at Anathoth in the territory of Benjamin, since it is your right to redeem it and possess it, buy it for yourself. I knew this was the word of the Lord, so I bought the field at Anathoth for my cousin Hanamel and weighed out for him 17 shekels of silver. I signed and sealed the deed, had it witnessed, and weighed out the silver on the scales. I took the deed of purchase, the sealed copy containing the terms and conditions, as well as the unsealed copy, and I gave this deed to Baruch, son of Neriah, the son of
Masiah.
In the presence of my cousin Hanamel, and of the witnesses who had signed the deed, and of all the Jews sitting in the courtyard of the guard. In their presence, I gave Baruch these instructions. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Take these documents, both the sealed and unsealed copies of the deed of purchase, and put them in a clay jar so they will last a long time. For this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Houses, fields, and vineyards will be bought in this land, will again be bought in this land. So, as Pastor pointed out yesterday when he heard this for the first time, or heard me read it for the first time, my profession comes from God, biblical direction. So yeah. I'm very humbled and very proud to follow in that profession as well.
Registering deeds of sale, right?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, because it is important to keep a record of it. As far as Michigan goes, the Office of Register of Deeds was started in the Constitution. Registers are charged to receive, review, record, retrieve, protect, and preserve land records, which is Bering County's history, in the form of the land records. We are the official recording office for the county, so all land records come through our office. The register is the custodian and keeps these safely and securely for this generation and for future generations as well. The register, and by doing all of this, we maintain the ease of commerce in the county and in the state as well. So we'll talk a little bit about land records, why they're important. It allows the chain of title to be reviewed. That's what allows for home sales and purchases. It also allows for good mortgage rates. If they can see that clean chain of title, then a lender is more apt to see you as a good customer and offer you a better rate. Ancestry may be researched. We had a woman come into our office. She searched the property that they owned back to when her family originally owned it. She copied that deed. She framed it and gave it to her father as a Christmas present. So it was kind of cool because it was like the family farm type thing. We also have all your documents, You keep them in perpetuity. So you can always get a copy of your deed at our office. So should, heaven forbid something happen, there be a fire, you know, you can always get a copy at our office. If it's just misplaced, you need it for an attorney or for some court proceeding or something like that, you can get a copy in our office. So that's always good. And that copy that you receive can be used in the court. The court will recognize it as an official copy as well. And of course, real estate being likely your most valuable asset, land records help establish ownership, and that's always important as well. Believe it or not, you don't have to necessarily record your deed, but there's definitely reasons and advantages to doing that. Real estate, again, being your most valuable asset, you want to protect that. And you're giving public notice that I own this property, that I have interest in this property. Michigan is a race notice state, and by having your document recorded, should there ever be a disputed claim, that would be good evidence for the judge to determine the priority of the title. And again, by recording your documents, you are protecting both the grantor and the grantee. So when we talk about contents of a document, there are statutory requirements that I have to look for in order to record a document. I'm going to kind of go through these kind of quickly because I can help you anytime with this information. So we need to know the document title, whether it's a warranty deed, a mortgage, a discharge of something, a release, an easement, that type of thing. There's page margins that are required. Parties involved. We need to know grantor, grantee, name and address. If there's an agreement, we need to know all the information for all the parties in the agreement or the easement. And also, if you have a trust, it might be the trustees as well as subsequent trustees as well. So, or heirs or beneficiaries if you're recording a ladybird deed. Any type of conveyance document where property is transferred from one individual or entity to another, we need to know consideration. The drafter, the person that prepared the document, name and address, dates, the date that it's effective, the date that it's signed, notary has to have a date. Dates are very important as well. The notary acknowledgement, of course, has its own set of requirements. And then the description of the property. I will advise not to use the description that comes on your tax bill. Sometimes those are truncated depending on your property and where it's located, just because of space accommodations within the software. There was a gentleman that came into, actually it was a family, that came into our office, recorded a deed, and then they had to come back and re-record it. The son had to come back in and record it. What happened was mom and dad owned 20 acres. They were going to give son 5 acres. They went to the local municipality, filled out the application, paid for the land split. They went to the county, filled out the application, paid for the land split. They had paid a surveyor to come out, survey their 15 acres away, so they could give 5 acres to their son. When they created the deed that actually gave the 5 acres to the son, they grabbed the description off of their original deed, and so they gave all 20 acres over to their son. So luckily it was their son. He could give the 15 acres back. But it's important to have someone review those types of things. They are definitely very important. Whether it be a surveyor or even the county has a GIS land description department that can help out with those types of things as well.
Yep. So if it hadn't been their son, he legally owned it. He could have been a pistol and said, I'm not giving it back. You gave it to me.
Could have been. I'm you know, very glad and very fortunate that it worked out as well. But most likely the intent was there, and so but it could have turned into a very long court process as well. So other requirements, you know, the color of the paper, the color of the ink, document has to be legible, those types of things. And the other part of content, of course, is subject matter. And when we talk about subject matter, this is the body of the document that's actually saying what you want it to do. And you have to think about what it's saying, your intent, and does what you say do what you intend. So it's very important to think about these types of things, because of course you want to protect your interests. A clear and comprehensive content ensures that all parties involved understand the intent, and it also protects the grantor, the grantee, the beneficiaries, the successor trustees, all the parties involved in the document. It's important to know who, when, and how you are receiving the property. Recording is a declaration, again, of public notice, your interest in this property. A recorded document may not be altered. So we receive calls, my husband passed away, I'd like to take his name off of the deed, I would like to add my child to the deed. We can't alter a document that's already been recorded, so a new one has to be created and signed, and then that gets recorded. For instance, if I had given, well, I gotta think about this. If I took property as Laura Ganaki, and then I got married, and I said, let's change the name, I would have to create a document that said, Laura Freeling, formerly known as Laura Ganaki, now gives this property to Laura Freeling and Mike Freeling. So I can't change my name on the first one. We're keeping a clear title that defines that Laura Ganaki, Laura Freeling are the same person, so formerly known as, or also known as, or now known as, type thing. So that's just one suggestion of how something like that could happen, or could take place.
If you don't do that, that could cause problems in the future, because your name would be Laura Freeling, and the title is under Laura Ganaki.
Right.
So you kind of have to do that if you want to clear up some of that stuff.
Yeah. And usually if you work with title companies, they will definitely help you work through these things and clear some of this stuff up, but that definitely puts a cloud on the title. Lenders don't look kindly to that type of information, nor do someone wanting to purchase it with a warranty deed or something of that nature. And of course, we want to try to avoid unintended consequences. There was a widow woman who came into our office. She wanted to put her kids on the property. So she created a document. She took it from herself, survivor of herself and her husband, to herself, her four adult children, and their four spouses. So now she had 9 people on this deed that all owned property. One of the children were trying to get a mortgage. They wanted to refinance their house. And the bank said, no, you already have interest in this other house. We're not going to do anything else. So that was an unintended consequence. She had all good intentions in her heart, but that was unfortunately a consequence of her actions, what the deed said it was going to do. Likewise, if she were to say she decided that she was going to sell and she wanted to move to Florida, she would have to have all four children and their spouses sign off on it, as well as herself if she wanted to sell that property, or if she wanted to refinance or do a home improvement project. And, you know, what if one of the children got a divorce and the spouse took off? Then when it comes time to do something, you got to try and track down the spouse to get rid of their interest in the property as well. So think about those kinds of things. If you talk to an attorney, if you're planning on doing something like that, think about the intent, how you want the interest to actually be conveyed. The document also needs to be complete when it comes to our office. So, again, we can't give you legal advice. We can't notarize documents, so signatures have to be notarized as well. And then once all of that is done, complete, it can be presented in person, in mail, however works best for you. I've actually gone to someone's house and picked one up one time as well, so I can definitely do that and make that work for you as well. And again, pursuant to MCL, to state statute, I can't give legal advice. So I can't tell you how, what, when to record. I can't help you draft a document. I can't determine ownership, all those types of things. So this is why I strongly suggest that you talk to a qualified attorney, one who's well-versed in Michigan real estate. On the handouts I gave, there's a yellow sheet that has some attorneys' names on there. It is, yeah, it's this yellow sheet. I will say that I can't recommend any one attorney over another, but I reached out to the Bar Association and said sometimes there's folks that come into our office, they feel like they can't afford an attorney, they want, you know, but they really need to talk to an attorney. And these are attorneys who said that they would be willing to talk to these people and help them out. So it's a place to start. Perhaps you have an attorney already, which is totally fine. But if not, you could give any of these people a question or a call, or look up in the yellow pages as well. Yes, Pastor?
So if somebody comes to you with a deed they want to record, and you look at it and you say, oh, I can see, you know, in your head, you're thinking, there's some problems with this. This is going to cause them some problems in the future. You can't say anything. You can't give them a heads up or a warning or say, you know, you might want to go talk to an attorney because there's some things in here that are a little bit wonky. Can't do that?
Really, I have no authority to do that. Mm-hmm. But what we try to do is say, so, and with the woman that came in that gave you her four kids, we sat at the counter and we said, so you want to give the property now, you want your children to have possession of the property right now with you along with their spouses. So 9 people you want to have possession of this property, and she said yes. So we have to record it. I don't know what their intent is because sure. I'm not having that conversation with them. And maybe that works out for some families, you know. But sometimes it doesn't. In this case, it was problematic. So, but it's just something to keep in mind. Yep. An attorney will also, like I said, ensure that your interest is conveyed exactly as you intended, just kind of like we talked about with our widowed woman with her kids. We also had a grandfather came into our office. He created his quitclaim deed, and he said, I'm giving my property to my grandson. We said, okay. The document met recording requirements. We recorded it. A couple days later, the grandson's mom came in and said, my son is 15. You need to take him off of this deed. We can't do that. I have no legal authority to do that at all. Now, can the 15-year-old sign off on his own? No, not legally. Can the mom sign off for him? She's his parent or his mother. Not legally. Does she have to go to the court and be declared a guardian so that she can sign off on him? That's probably the best way to do it. I mean, you know, it was a good intentions in his heart, again, but ended up being consequential to the grandson, to the mom, etc. And I think other grandchildren as well.
So grandfather should have waited till the grandson was 18. So he was legal and not a minor.
Right.
Because that caused some problems.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Because the minors cannot sign off on their own. So. The other thing about an attorney that's good is they can explain to you tenancy. Tenancy is very important on a document. How you take tenancy, which is when the mom gave the children or gave the property to herself and her children, she did it as tenants in common, and each tenant had an interest in the ownership of the property. There's also joint tenants, which is equal ownership. Sometimes you might see it written as joint tenants with rights of survivorship. That just means that if one of the parties passes prior to the other one, then they have the rights of survivorship, so then they have the ownership, the interest in all the property. So they can move it if they want, sell it, or do whatever they want with it. There's also tenancy by the entirety, and that's kind of left for married folks, as might be why you see that written on a deed. I've also seen tenants of the entirety with rights of survivorship. So what you want to just make sure, I'm not going to tell you what to make sure, because I don't know what your intent is. But this is why it's important to talk to someone who understands these types of things and can explain them to you and help you work through them. Because maybe you do want to be a co-owner with, I don't know, a sibling, you know, maybe mom left a house, and maybe we do want to just be co-owners and rent it or something like that. I don't know. So whatever your intent, just make sure that is written and explained within the body of the document that you're writing that you're going to record for that land use. So We'll talk now a little bit about Lady Verdee's Enhanced Life Estates, Trusts, and Wills. Again, understand I'm not an attorney, so I'm giving you my best understanding of these types of documents. The main gist of estate planning in general, though, is to ensure your savings and assets go to your heirs, to your beneficiaries, rather than creditors, and that they don't have to go to probate. We don't want our heirs to go to probate. We would like it just to be done, clean, and therefore they can just move forward when it's time. Lady Bird deed enables the property owner to transfer real estate to beneficiaries without going through probate. You deed the real estate back to yourself, and then you designate who will become the owner when it's time. So a well-written Lady Bird deed will allow you to finance, if you want to finance your property. Maybe you want to rent your property. Maybe you want to sell your property and move down to Florida. A Lady Bird deed will allow you to do that without bothering the beneficiaries of that deed, without their approval. But then when it's time, if I were to pass and I had my Lady Bird deed done, recorded, it would go immediately to my children. It's just an immediate transfer. Again, I'm not an attorney, but my understanding is that it's an immediate transfer. And then it just requires, you know, a death certificate eventually has to be recorded. And, you know, you might want to go to the county anyways and change the tax information, all of that type of stuff. The thing with a life estate, I did this yesterday too. Mouse.
It's on the screen up there. You just have to move it away.
There
you find it.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yep.
I'm sorry. The life estate, sometimes depending on how they're written, will view the current owner and the future owners all as owners now. So depending on how it's written. I have seen several attorneys do a life estate and write it like a Lady Bird deed. So I'm not saying that they're all that way, but I'm just saying and suggesting that it's things that you ask about and that you understand and that they explain to you the benefits, the pros and cons of a Lady Bird deed or an enhanced life estate or a life estate of some sort. Trusts, of course, are a very effective tool that some people use. The trust is has immediate effect upon signing and funding of it. You can change things within your trust. You do that with your attorney, and then you will list you will be a trustee, and then you will list successor trustees. So if I were to do a trust, I would list myself as trust or as a trustee, and then I would make Mike a successor trustee, and then the kids as well. So if I'm gone, then they as successor trustees can manage the my wishes, which are listed in the trust, without much complication at all. And so that's how your desires get fulfilled, is by the trustee facilitating all of that. A will is a little bit different. A will doesn't go into effect until after someone passes, so when it's time. But I will say that a will does not convey property. Authority does. So someone has to have authority to convey property. I own my property, so I have to convey it to my children if I want. Otherwise, if that's not done and recorded in like a Lady Bird deed, for example, or a well-written life estate, for example, but it's in my will, they may have to take my will to probate and say, look, judge, this is mom's will, this is what she intended, you know, give me authority so I can go to the registered deeds office now and sell that property or record the sale of the property or get it in my name. So just something to keep in mind about that. Talk to your attorneys, talk to, if you have trusted friends or family members, or if you know an expert in the area, in that area, definitely talk to them and get their advice as well. Again, I'm not an attorney. I can't give you legal advice. So, the other thing, attorneys would be able to assist in drafting that document. So they're going to talk to you about it, what your intent is. They know your intent. They can draft it such that it will effectuate the change that you want, what you want to happen. And of course, a lot of attorneys have notaries readily available in their office. So they can talk to you about the document, they can draft the document for you, you can sign the document right there, and then a lot of them will actually even send it to us to record. So in essence, your attorney's office can be your one-stop shop. So just talk to them and see. And they should give you a ballpark figure, I think, of what it would cost. I know a lot of people are kind of shy. It can be expensive, but it can also be worth it because I see a lot of families that come into our office not able to do what they need to do because there wasn't a lady bird in place or not a will in place or something of that nature. So they have to go over to probate. And that can be a long process. You have to petition the court. You have to provide evidence to the court. You have to notice. You have to give public notice that you've opened this case, and anyone who has claim or interest can contact the court. So it's a process, and those are fees and expense as well as time. So just something to think about. Yes?
So for most of us, when we buy a house, maybe we go through a realtor, it's the title company that's preparing most of the documents. And they probably have attorneys on staff who have reviewed documents. And it's most likely, I'm guessing, like in my case, it'd be a warranty deed.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to switch it to a ladybird deed, I'd have to be intentional about finding an attorney. Can a title company do that too or not?
I'd
probably need a real estate attorney.
Yeah, I would go to a real estate attorney. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, one well-versed in Michigan law. Would you agree, Mr. Gerber?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Gerber, can you give us recommendations on an attorney? Because she's not allowed to.
So another part of what I like to do is just let you guys know, let the residents, county residents know of what I call questionable practices within our office. Always if you get an unsolicited offer, you should always review it thoroughly. You should always talk to a trusted friend, again, an expert in the area. Before you sign a contract, I strongly suggest you talk to an attorney or someone, again, someone that you trust, someone that has knowledge of that area, that field. We had a company that was going around knocking on the door. Pastor, would you like $1,000 right now? I just want to sell your house in the future. Does that work? Sign here.
Well, I don't
sign
know.
Here.
I'm immediately skeptical.
I can notarize it too right away. It's all done. I don't know about that part. But what that ended up being was a 40-year lien on that property. They said that they wanted to sell the property, but the contract read that it was for 40 years. So not only that, but it was for subsequent owners. So if I did sell his property, and then the person he sold it to was in it for a year and sold it, but they didn't use me, I can come back on that person and I can say, you owe me money because of this contract, because of this lien that's on this property. So that was something that we notified title companies about, realtors about, so that they were aware. Actually, the Michigan, the Realtors Association actually put through legislation, so these types of things won't be out there anymore. But those types of things can happen, unfortunately. I also received a letter for, Dear Mrs. Freeling, I want to buy your vacant land. I'll give you good money for it. Just, you know, give me a call, give me a text anytime. This was a very Christian letter. He had the Christian symbol on top. It said, God bless. And it said, looking forward to working with you. I mean, it was all very positive. But I'm not going to do that. If I'm going to sell property, I'm going to call someone like Mr. Gerber who knows the area and can help me sell it proper. There were other solicitations that came in like that. There was one from Land and Nuggets that was out of California. The one I got was out of Georgia. It was from Thomas West was his name. Land and Nuggets out of California and Whitestone Land Offer out of Phoenix, Arizona. those actually came with purchase agreements and an offer for $24,000, for $25,000, you sign here, send it back to me, I'll take care of everything. I'll do your closing costs, I'll do the recording costs, everything. I don't know, $24,000 sounds good, but Mr. Gerber, for 5 acres in Lincoln Township, could I probably get more than $24,000? I don't know. It depends where it is. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but it depends where it is. I mean, talk to someone who knows the area and who can do those analyses and make sure that you are getting what you deserve. Okay. We also had several people show us these. I just had a call actually from a judge last week, who said that he received this. It has your mortgage or information on it, so it looks very official. It says it comes from county deed records. This kind of looks like a check. I kind of think I might get some money out of this. Well, it's not a check. I can guarantee you that we would never send money this way. But if you sign this and send it back, you may have just purchased a home warranty. Is a home warranty a bad thing? I don't know. Again, I would talk to someone like Mr. Gerber or an attorney and say, what are your thoughts on this type of thing? But do it yourself. You know, you should be the one that says, I want this. What are my options? What's best for me and for my dollars? Mm-hmm. So just something to think about, these things that come in the mail, these unsolicited offers. Again, snowbirds. If you know a snowbird or if you are a snowbird, be careful of that. There was actually someone up north who went down to Florida for the winter, came back, and there was a for sale sign in their yard, which they did not put there. So know your neighbors, get to know your neighbors, have your neighbors call you or text you if something's happening, or always have someone be looking on your property if you are a snowbird. You can also consider property alerts. I gave everyone also a little handout on property alert. Property alert is a free email notification service offered within the county for documents that are recorded in our office. So if you subscribe, put in your criteria, and a document is recorded in our office that matches that criteria, you receive an email that says something was recorded in the Bering County Register of Deeds office in your name or the criteria that you had set up. This allows you to know that this is happening and you can take action if needed. So some people think, I will catch that because if someone forges my signature, I will most likely know that and it will be easy to prove in court. But the problem with that is that the victims of these types of crimes, of mortgage theft, or unfortunately even if someone were to do a deed, try to steal your property or sell it to someone else without your knowledge, is that these people don't know that's happening until sometimes 6 months, a year, maybe more down the road. And by that time, the perpetrator is gone, he's got the money, and he's gone. So some sort of service like this would alert you right away that something had happened. One thing to note is that any of these types of services, you may have heard of Home Title Lock or Fraud Guard or Property Fraud or Property Record Notification, whatever it's called, none of them are preventative. But what they do is they give you early notification and empower you to take action right away as opposed to waiting for a lender or for the treasurer to say you haven't been paying your taxes or for the sheriff to come pound up a note on your door that says you haven't paid your mortgage that you didn't know that you had. So that's something to consider and think about as well. And then foreclosure rescue scheme. If you know of someone who is in this predicament or, you know, these fraudsters will call folks, when very vulnerable folks, and say, I will help you refinance all this, I will help you reconfigure it, and we'll get you one low payment. Just give me your credit card number for my fees, and I will call them. And then you never hear from them again. So I'm not saying that there's not people out there that actually do this kind of stuff, but again, if someone calls you up, it's okay to be skeptical. So just some information for thought. Mm-hmm. We also have a gentleman come in with this. Now, this one actually was a scam. He came in with this. It's a notice of intent to levy assets. It was from the state of Michigan, and it said you owe me $32,000. If you pay it right now, I won't put a lien on your property. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, the state of Michigan will just put a lien on your property. They're not going to notify you. They're just going to do it. So these types of things, again, this one was a proven scam. So when it comes back next time, it might be someone different than the state of Michigan. I don't know. But just be careful, because those fraudsters, they kind of tend to recycle those. They're all kind of cyclical as well. And then, of course, there is those folks. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
On TV, they're showing commercials for a company that will protect you or do something to help from people taking your deed, stealing your deed. Is that a common thing that someone will come in and change your deed to their name and then take out mortgages against that and you don't find out about it for years?
So it's possible. It's not common in Berrien County, I can tell you that.
Why is that?
Well,
because they advertise on TV that they can protect you or something from this situation.
So first of all, let's address that.
Okay.
How are they going to protect you? Is it just, we're going to monitor these records the same as Property Alert does?
I think that's what it is.
Yep, and then some of them, if you pay for the service, they may give you something if there's a claim, if you have to go to court or for court fees. So just be careful of what you're paying for and what you're going to get. In Berrien County, if you were to go on our website and look for your warranty deed for your mortgage, for land records in general, you will see a black box that covers part of the document. So people can't just troll through the website and grab information off. But I will say that one of the things that fraudsters do look for is a house that's lien free, so the mortgage is paid off. And that's what they look for, and some of them then will attempt to take out a mortgage in your name, try to impersonate you and take out a mortgage in your name. And so then again, if they were successful doing that, then that's when like Property Alert would alert you that something's been recorded and you can kind of address it right away. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. So having your mortgage paid off, you're at a higher risk for someone doing this to you than if you had a mortgage.
You are, yes. Okay. For mortgage fraud especially, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, unfortunately, yes. Great for you for paying it off, but yeah, now it's sitting there and it's free.
Property Alert, which is that put out by your office,
yes.
And it's free.
It is free, yeah.
And so this would be kind of an alternative to Home Title Lock that I've seen those ads too.
Yep.
So that you're paying for, this you're getting free, and it's basically a notification as soon as something happens so you can call or address it right away.
Yep, you can look at it.
Get an attorney.
Yeah, you can look at the document that's been recorded. And if you have any questions, you can always call our office, and I'm happy to go through it with you. Any of the team members would be happy to go through it with you, get you a copy if you need. If it's something that you don't think is yours, that you think might be fraudulent or suspect, then you can go definitely to your law enforcement right away, to your local police department or to the sheriff, and start there. And then that's how you would start that action against this person, this fraudulent person who filed a document in your name that wasn't you.
Those types of shenanigans, though, are kind of rare in Berrien County. They're not as common as other places.
It does happen. I'm not going to say, and it can happen. I'm not going to say that it doesn't. But what we've seen, sometimes it's siblings that aren't getting along after mom passed, that might be trying to move the paper. Moving the property and trying and forging someone else's name. I have not heard of any of the mortgage fraud happening in Berrien County. I'm not aware of that. I do know that someone called me and said someone stole their property, their house was for sale, and we did some investigation and we looked at it, and what happened was the neighbor was purchasing, I believe, a piece of property behind him, but adjacent to this person's, but grabbed their legal description. So his sale was was good. It was bona fide. But it was just the description didn't match what he was purchasing. So they talked. They were good neighbors. They talked, and he cleared up that title for them. So, but having property alert, they would have been. Unfortunately, they found it in Zillow. Well, actually, I should say fortunately, they found it while they perused in the website on Zillow and saw that their house was for sale. So, but had they had property alert, they would also have been notified that something happened with this PIN number, with this parcel number. So, yeah. Nope. And then if anyone ever offers you a copy of a deed, just know that you can always get a copy in our office, and that the cost of that is governed by state statute. So it's $1 a page. I know some of these companies will call folks and say, I can get it for you for $75. I don't know if they put it on special paper. I don't know if they frame it. I don't know what they do to it. But you can get it for $1 in my office. So $1 a page. So I just want to let you know about that as well. Again, you can feel free to call anytime. If you have a question, if something doesn't seem right, by all means, give a call. I'm happy to talk to you. And I don't know if there's any more questions. Yes?
Why would you need a copy of your deed?
Lots of times, like, if you haven't done a Lady Bird deed, and if you're going to talk to an attorney about doing a Lady Bird deed, they might say, give me a copy of your deed. Sometimes people need it for a lender, for a mortgage. Maybe. So those are the main reasons. Or just for your own, you know, peace of mind that I had this is it, I have it, I know it exists, kind of thing.
But having a copy doesn't prevent someone from trying to steal your property.
No, not necessarily. I mean, unfortunately, there are just evil people in the world. And, you know, I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. And they kind of prey upon the vulnerable, or those that have been successful, right? You've paid off your mortgage, you've paid your dues. And now they're like, oh, well, I can take advantage of this. So, yeah. Yes, so just because you have it doesn't mean that they couldn't find it out there, because, again,
it's public records.
Yep, all the information in my office is public information, correct. Yep. Yes?
The TOD, transfer on death, can you do that for property also?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that would happen right through a Lady Bird deed type thing.
Okay.
Or are you talking about a specific...
I just wondered if it was applicable. Well, I know it is on stock. And
yeah. Yes, that's exactly what a Lady Bird deed is, or a Lady Bird deed does, a well-written one.
Okay.
It will transfer immediately on death. Yeah. Yes?
When should you record a Lady Bird deed?
You know, the good Lord only knows. Because he knows when our time is up. So, I mean, it doesn't hurt to record a Lady Bird deed now. You can change it. And I do suggest that even if you do something like that, that you review these types of records, you know, every couple years, every 5 years. If you do property alert, I suggest that you look at it, you know, when your summer bill comes and when your tax bill comes. Just go in and look at this stuff.
So normally,
but
your beneficiaries would record the Lady Bird deed after your death?
No, so you have to sign off on it. So if you've done that, then you want to record it. Again, remember, we're a race notice state. So say you have a Lady Bird deed, you're gonna give the property heir it down to, or transfer it down to, I don't know, your children. Maybe your children have something else has somehow gotten into the family, and they record something ahead of that, whether it's by your signature or not. You know, then that would be recorded first. So that's race notice. It may come into play. I don't know. I'm saying worst case scenario here, of course, obviously. But I have seen where some vulnerable people, some folks that have someone come in to help them, where they have had property transferred to them from this person signing off on their property. So if a seasoned person, you know, has someone come in to help them out daily, you know, do their meals or clean the house or help them get up and down and those types of things. I have seen where that happened. So that was an illegal transaction that had to be, you know, then fought in the court. So if you're thinking about doing it, I suggest you do it right away. If you talk to an attorney, of course, the attorney will advise you as well. But yeah, the nice thing about ladybird deeds, so if I create a ladybird deed and I say, I'm going to give the property to my son Mason, and then he makes me mad, I can re-record my ladybird deed and say, I'm giving the property to my daughter Olivia. So you can do those types of things. A well-written ladybird deed will allow you to have control of that property. So you can refinance it. You can, maybe you want to rent it. Maybe you want to sell it. Or give it to a different heir, a different beneficiary. Maybe there's other reasons why you need to change your beneficiaries. But a well-written ladybird deed allows that to happen. So honestly, the sooner you record it, the better.
Yes. What is the charge for registering the deed?
There's a $30 flat recording fee, and then if it's a warranty deed, there's an additional $5 tax certification fee. And then if there's transfer consideration, transfer tax may be applicable. It just kind of depends.
So when we have this done, we bring it in, it's registered, then we get copies from you that it shows it has...
Yep. You can get a copy of the day that you record a document, but we hold that document for 3 days and then we return it to you or to whoever you tell us to send it. Yep. So, again, probably more information than you really wanted to know, but again, I think if you understand the totality of it all, it's easier to do your individual piece. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Laura. That was excellent. Good. I know I learned a lot, and I need to check into my own situation as well. I think I probably have a warranty deed and probably want to get that changed at some point to a ladybird deed. So, anyway. I think Laura will stick around for a few minutes if anybody else has more questions or wants to chat. Many of you know her anyway, but let's rise and close with the Lord's Prayer. You can stay seated if you need to. Our Father, who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks for coming. Have a good day.